So let's open up to Kufayim and Aleph. And we're two lines up from the bottom, Omar Rava, the Omar Rava. So what we skipped are a few lines of Gemara about a Chavis Shenikva B'Sasmua, which is a Sugin Kabbalah Stuma, as far as Kalim are concerned. I thought maybe I would have the time, you know, to prepare it. I'm still not giving up on it, you know. But it'll take me about 20 hours to prepare these five lines of Gemara. So I beg for your Mechila. Why, Mitch, you prepared it?
Okay.
No, I did say something about it, I think. I'm still hoping I'll get back to it, but Rabosai, I told you that once we were learning a sugya in Olos, you know, Tosis made a reference in Olos, and Rav Salvechik said, I'm a little rusty in Olos. So I figured if he can say I'm rusty in Olos, I can certainly say I'm rusty in Kalim. Kalim is probably the most complicated masechta. The second shot.
Well, now we see what you mean now.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Again, I still hope we'll come back to it. You could learn it, you know, for a Daf Yomi, you could learn it, you know, and just read through it. But if you want to get some insight into it, it's very, very challenging. Okay. So, Rabosai, for this sugya, which is also very profound, we have to remind ourselves of the Mishnah. And the Mishnah, back on Daf Tzadi Vav Amid Beis in Masechta Bava Kamma, already established that the Heshiv is like Zela Asher Gazal has two different meanings to it, and they're both correct. One meaning is that he pays Kishas HaGzela, if you recall. So what that means is that, let's say, for example, he steals an object and the object is destroyed, and he has to return damim, he pays its value. And now, since the time of the gzela, the object appreciated in value. I'm sorry, the object in this case depreciated in value. Let's take the simpler case. So since it depreciated in value, the gazel would like to say to the nigzal, I want to pay you the new price. Instead of paying you 100, it's worth only 50 on the market. I'll pay you 50. But the halacha is, asher gazal ke'ein shegazal. So he's going to have to pay the full 100 because that's what it was worth at the time of the gzela. Now there's another halacha in Veshim, like gzela shel gazal. If the object is still intact, it's be'en, then he could return the object to the nigzal. Mm. And that, my friends, doesn't sound like a big chiddush, but it's a big chiddush in the following case. Let's say he stole a bottle of whiskey before Pesach. The bottle of whiskey sells for 200. And now, because it's Chomet Shavuot of a Pesach, it's also Banah, you can't even give it to a guy as a gift. Because that too is considered deriving benefit from it. Now, I don't think you'd want to feed your dog whiskey, although I've heard such things. But you might want to give it to your, you know the famous story about the Paritz. You know, the Paritz calls this Jew in, and during the course of the conversation, you know, he fills up a small glass of wine. Obviously the wine is not kosher wine. And he gives him like a glass of wine. He puts it on the table and he says to the Jew, I want to drink with you. So the Jew, you know, gets scared. He doesn't know what to do. He's sitting in front of the Paritz. The Paritz is offering him wine and he can't drink the wine. So at that point the Paritz gets very angry. And he points to the revolver that's on the table and he says to him, Jew, drink the wine. So the Yiddel says to him, my honor, could you please fill it up to the top? Because now that I'm allowed to drink it, it's pikuach nefesh. I want to drink a whole cup. So in any event, so when the Gazlan stole the chametz, it was, you know, this is a very expensive whiskey. It was worth a lot. And what's considered a good bottle of whiskey these days? In my day, there was something called J&B. Is that still around?
Yeah.
I remember we had a siyum in the Rav Shiyum when we finished the second Perek Chulin. So the Rav agreed to have a siyum. That itself was a chiddush, that the Rav would agree to have a siyum. So we finished the second Perek Chulin, and we brought various things on the table. We put on the Rav's table, you know, some kichaluch and so forth. We could have a siyum. And somebody brings a bottle of whiskey. So the Rav says, J&B, only the best. Yeah. They used to call J&B. J&B. Yoshua Ben. Okay. If I have to explain the punchline. Yeah. All right. So, the Omar Rav.
Medical chamira makes no difference?
That's an interesting question. You know, let's say it was mevatel is chomer, so therefore it's not chomer shovel of a Pesach, and the iser of hanah that applies to chomer shovel of Pesach should be rescinded because he didn't violate the iser bal yiro bal yimatz. La halacha, I wouldn't rely on it because we sell our chametz and buy it back after Pesach to avoid chametz shovel of a Pesach. I wouldn't recommend bittul on masses amount of valuable chametz. But I am a poskim and see if they'll if you have somebody who will allow it. You know, the best thing is to sell to a goy. Amar Rava, Hare Omru, the Mishnah says gazal chametz the oval of a Pesach. So it's interesting. At the time of the Gzela, this whiskey bottle was worth 200. Now it's worth zippo. And the reason is because Chomet Shavu of Pesach is also by Noah. He can't benefit from it. He can't even give it to the parents as a gift. So what is he going to do with this situation? The Torah says, Vashem's like Gzela Shar Gozal. And we spoke about the fact that even if it depreciates in value, he should be paying the higher value. So if he's paying the higher value, in this case, he should be paying 200 for this bottle of wine as it was worth before Pesach, or bottle of whiskey, I should say. So the Mishnah says, no, Omer lo areishal chal fanecha. Now we can invoke the second halach of Eishav Sagzeil. Not that I pay you the value of the object, because if I would, I'd have to pay the full 200 kishas Sagzeil, but rather I give the object back, return it to you, and I present it to you, Hareshal Cholifanecha, your problem. Now you have chametz, it's worthless, but it's the very physical object. In other words, here it's not the Tohar, but it's the Etzem, meaning what I mean to say for a few people in the audience who might know what I'm talking about, is that the mitzvah, the chiyuv of Hashava, applies to the object Be'en. Yeah. If the object ben is lost, then and only then do we activate the principle of kishas hagzeil, let him pay the value of the object as it was before it depreciated, the full 200. But now that the object itself is alive and well, and the ben can be returned by the gazlan to the nigzal, harei shalcha lifanech. By Rav. So that we know, and we didn't need Rav for that because that's the mission. Now, what's Rava's Sofek here? And at this point we turn to Kufhei Amud Beis. So with your permission, I would like to attempt to give a little bit of an introduction to the boy Rava, to Rava's Sofek. Is that okay? Okay. You know, we have a democracy here, so we can vote a majority of rules.
Is it? Then you might have asked for that.
Anyway, it was a unanimous decision. I made the decision. So, okay, until now, we've discussed the concept, but now Rava wants to really delve deeply into this concept of what's called Shvuas Kfiras Mamon. And if you recall, we read a parsha at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, the fifth chapter, called the parsha of Asham Gzelos. And that parsha tells us, and we learned this sugya from top to bottom, that if a person is accused of gzela and denies that accusation and takes a shvua to that effect, he says, "Lo gazalti mimcha, I didn't steal from you." Then if at some point he admits, he confesses his crime, he wants to do tshuva, he's got to bring a korban asham. However, that only applies because it's called a kfiras mamon. Those are the key words. If you don't write them down, if I had a blackboard, I would write it on the board here. Kfiras mamon. And then you add the word bishvua. So the shvua has to be described or classified as a kfiras mamon. Let's explain what those two words, kfiras mamon, mean. What you have to do is, you have to make a comparison between the fabrication and the truth. Meaning, when he takes a false oath, did he save himself money? In the classical case, he certainly did. He says, "I deny that I stole your property." So whether or not the property is intact or whether it's gone and it's lost and I have to pay its value, in either case, he's going to have to pay out of pocket or return the object. Right? The object, let's say, has a certain value to it, right? So let's imagine that if he would go to his, I don't know, his, how do you say in English, a roe cheshbon, his accountant, right? If he go to accountant, right? And his accountant wants to create a balance sheet of his assets and his deficits. So right now, since he stole this object, and he didn't tell his accountant about that, so his accountant counts it on his assets. You know, it's one of his assets. So he stole a cow, and the cow is in the corral, and now he's got a cow that's worth 500 in his assets. And he took a shvuah to the effect that he didn't steal the cow. As a result of that shvuah, he's benefiting to the tune of 500. But it doesn't matter how much he's benefiting, it could be one pruta. But if he's gaining one pruta as a result of that shvuah, now that he's admitting the truth, he's going to have to cough up an object of value, which is worth a pruta, or maybe pay its value, you know, in currency. Therefore, it's called a shvuah of a kfiras mamon. A kfiras mamon means that he gained something financially by this mamon. So again, how would I gauge, how would I determine, what parameter do I use to say that he gained money? I go to the accountant, and I ask the accountant to give me a list of all his assets. Let's say he would be taxed by the government to call him by his assets. So he's got this cow, which is a stolen cow, that's one of his assets. He took a shvuah that I didn't steal it. It's mine from Sheshis Yimei Breshis. And therefore, I gain something that's worth 500, that's an asset. That's called a kfiras mamon.
Okay.
But supposing the object that was stolen is today meaning at the time of the shvuah, at that moment of the shvuah, is worthless. What happened? He stole chametz before Pesach. Okay, we'll call it the 10th of Nisan. Now fast forward to the 1st of Iyar. Okay, it's the 1st of Iyar, and he takes a shvuah because the owner of that bottle of whiskey knows that so-and-so, this guy, stole his whiskey, and he says to him, return the whiskey. The guy says, I never stole it from you. Is that shvuah to be defined as a kfiras mamon? The whiskey today is worthless. It's osur by no b'toras chomet she'ovel of a Pesach. Let's say he didn't make bittul, right? And therefore, he really, this Gazan who took this false oath, has gained nothing by taking this shvuah. So at this point, Rabosai, I don't understand the suffix of Rava. Rava is going to ask the following question. Nishba olav. The Gazlan took a shvuah, a false oath, on the chametz. Mahu. Is he chayav a karban asham gzelos? Meaning, is there a kfiras mamon here? Or is there no kfiras mamon? So what I'm going to do is, and again, this is something that you're not allowed to do, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to skip the first sad in the suffix because I want to show you what's intuitively logical. What we would have said is beyond question. Oh, Dilma, and then I'll come back to fill in the missing blank, which I'm not sure I'm going to do about the sugya of Tumah Vitara. Maybe yes, maybe no. Oh, Dilma, hashta mias hamanach. At this particular moment when he took the shvuah, the chametz is munach. Munach means it's sitting in his cupboard. You know, it's locked up in his kitchen cabinet or wherever he keeps his whiskey. The afra bi'almahu. How much is it worth on the market? It's worth on the market the same value that the dust on the earth is worth. Try to sell the dust on the earth. I don't think you'll find a buyer. And therefore, v'lo kafar le mamona. His shvuah does not amount to a kfiras mamon. And that's what I would have said intuitively. And what we have to figure out here, and I'm racking my brains, is to understand the first tzad in Rava, and why Rava... That sound I haven't heard in a long time. I like that. That reminds me of the old-fashioned phones. Okay, fine. So what's the first tzad in Rava? Do you understand my problem here? You know, just even before we read, yeah. We read the text of the Gemara. if the shvuah is on the dust of the earth, meaning on a piece of chametz that passed through Pesach and now is aser banah and it's worthless, then clearly Rav is right when he says lo kafar leib mamona. This is not a shvua that constitutes a kfiras mamon. Michael, you want to give me an answer?
I know. I want to put a slightly different scenario and see what happens if he steals it on the 10th of Nisan. Yeah. He makes the Shavua on the 12th of Nisan, and then after Pesach,
that's definitely an Asham Gzelos. Then he's chayav an Asham Gzelos because at the moment of the Shavua, he took a Shavua that constitutes, that qualifies as a Shavua's Kfiras Mamon. But here, he took the Shavua after the Chag, at the point in which the Chametz, which is sitting on his cupboard, is absolutely worthless. You know, if the accountant is going to ask him, you know, or maybe his insurance broker is going to ask him for a list of all his assets that are worth at least the Shavu'ot Pruta, that bottle of whiskey is not on the list. It's simply worth Afra Diara. And if it's worth Afra Diara, there's no such thing as a Kfiras Mamon. So at the time of the Shavua, since the Chametz, in this case the whiskey bottle, is sitting on his table, therefore it is not a kfiras mamon. There's no shavius to this bottle of whiskey, and therefore there's no chiyuv asham gzelos. That, I think, is pretty crystal clear. So what's the first tzad in Rav? Mi amrina, says Rav, and now we're going back to what we skipped. Kevan de'i mignav boy shlumale is therefore mamona kakofrale. Why is this called a kfiras mamon? Because what happens if mida keneged mida, right, a good measure deserves an equally good measure, somebody comes in, breaks into the house of the Gazlan, and steals the bottle of whiskey. Rabbi Moshe, I have no idea why the Gemara gives this example. I would have said that the whiskey went up in a fire or in a smoke, or maybe he gave it to his Goyish Aparis. I don't know what he did with the whiskey. Okay, I don't know. That I can't answer to you. Maybe somebody knows the answer. I don't. But for some reason, the Gemara gives the following scenario. Somebody breaks into the house of the Gazlan and steals the bottle of whiskey. What happens now, Rabbi Moshe? What is the Gazlan going to pay when he admits the truth, when he confesses his crime? He pays the 200, the value of the whiskey, kishas hakzela. Because as we said at the outset, the heshiv is hakzela shagazal, some divides, you know, bifurcates into two different directions. On the one hand, it means here's your chametz, take it and run. I don't have to add another penny to it because hareshal chalifa necha. But that's only because I have the gzela, I have the chametz on my table. If I don't have the chametz, it's gone. Then the gazan has to pay the full value of the chametz, namely its value kishas ha gzela, which means he has to pay the 200. Now, I don't get it. Right now, at the time of the Shavua, he has the chametz. The Gemara says so explicitly. Hashta mias hamanachle. It's sitting there on his table. It's locked up in his cupboard. So at this point, he's taking a Shavua on that shtickle bright, on that piece of whiskey, on that bottle of whiskey. That bottle of whiskey is worthless. It's ki afra diara. So I really have trouble here with this very theoretical, conceptual possibility that if the Ganav would have come in... What do you mean if the Ganav would have come in to steal his bottle of whiskey? Right now there is no Ganav. So theoretically, there could be a Ganav. But we have to pinpoint that one moment in time in which he takes the oath. At that moment in time when he took the Shavua, he's the proud owner, as a Gazlan, mind you, of the bottle of whiskey, and Hareshal Cholofanecha. He's not saving himself any money of value by saying, again, psychologically, you may say, you know, he protects his own reputation. You know, I never stole your whiskey. I'm a good guy. I don't walk into people's homes and steal their whiskey bottles. Don't accuse me. But in pure dollars and cents terms, he's not gaining a thing. Because what's he gaining here in dollars and cents? He's gaining, at the moment of the Shavua, the ownership, so to speak, over this bottle of whiskey. Well, this bottle of whiskey is worthless. It's Kiafra Diara. So where's the kfiris moment here? Because of some theoretical possibility in the future? What are we going to say? Iglai milsul mafreha. That when the gadav comes in and steals the whiskey bottle, now we have to say that the shvuah itself was a shvuah's kfiris moment? The shvuah has to be machayev and makorban oshav at the moment of the shvuah. Not only that, Rava in his Safik doesn't even present the scenario that at the end of the day the whiskey bottle was stolen from the hands or the possession of the gazlan. He doesn't even say such a thing. All he says is Kevan de'i migna, if it would have been stolen. You know, and I'm thinking to myself, when people pay insurance brokers, you know, they come in and they send an adjuster. Of course, they always give you an underestimate. You have to actually hound them and make sure every couple of years, you know, you get a new adjustment, because hopefully the value goes up. I don't know, silver usually goes up, no? Well, lavda. It's gone down.
It has gone down.
So let's say I had silver that went up in value, you know, so I've got to make sure that the adjuster comes, and because otherwise if chas v'shalom it's stolen, and in my family that seems to be quite common. My parents lost almost all their silver, and my wife and I lost almost all our silver. It's just, I don't know what to say. So what happens is, when the adjuster comes and he wants, you know, if at the end of the day he doesn't find a loophole, but if he pays you back according to the adjustment. Yeah, well, that was 5 years ago or 25 years ago. It's worth a lot more today. But why do you pay an insurance company? Lamaisa, if nobody steals my silver, the money that I pay the insurance broker was what we call kesef lapach. It means it was totally a waste of money. But I'm not a Navi. I'm not a prophet. Nobody whispered into my ear, you know, in the name of Eliyahu HaNavi, that there won't be a ganav coming in to steal my silver. So I need some sort of a psychological peace of mind, right? I need to know that if in case, you know, I'm guaranteed that I won't suffer a tremendous loss, and that's why you pay an insurance company. In a sense, what Rav is saying, I think, on a certain level, he's saying in his first side that, you know what, this piece of chametz, this bottle of whiskey, although it doesn't have objective value on the market, go try to sell the whiskey, nobody's going to pay for it, it's also mana, but nevertheless, it does have subjective value. It's worth something for the gazlan, because in event that whiskey bottle is stolen, right, he's going to have to shell out the 500, the 200 that it was worth at the time of the gzela. So when I look at this bottle of whiskey, what do I see in front of my eyes? Halachically, you know, if I could put on my halachic spectacles, what do I see? One side is to say, I see afra diara, it's not worth a dime. The other side is to say, well, it is worth something to the gazlan, because he needs the peace of mind to know that he has this gzela, has this whiskey bottle, because in the event of loss of the whiskey bottle, he's going to pay an enormous sum of money. Kishas gzela. He's only potter as long as he can hold on to this whiskey bottle. So ask the gazlan what this whiskey bottle is worth to you. I'm not sure exactly what he's going to say. He might not say 200, but he might say 100. Maybe he'll say 50. He'll say it's worth something. It's certainly worth a shavah prut, because as long as he's holding on to that whiskey bottle, he can say to the nigzal, Hareshel Cholfanecha, go fly a kite. I'm not going to pay you a dime. But if chas v'sholem he loses that bottle of whiskey, he's in deep trouble. So in a certain sense, that bottle of whiskey is a physical representation of a value that, although you cannot cash it in the market presently at this current moment, but from the gazlan's perspective, it really is worth a lot. And this is what Rav, I think, is vacillating back and forth. How do we judge and define a kfiris moment? What are our barometers? What is the, you know, the test that we have to subject this gzela to? If he doesn't gain anything financially by taking a shvua on this object, because this object is valueless, then there's no korban asham. There's no parsha of asham gzelos, because it's not a kfiras mamon. But if, on the other hand, I view this as mamon, not from the perspective of its market value, But what it means to the Gazlan, because with this and through this whiskey, he saves himself the full payment of Kishas HaGzela, that makes the whiskey bottle into a Chefza de Mammon, and the Kfira in that Shvua becomes a Kfiras Mammon. That's the best I can do at this point.
It's actually a liability. It's not that, it's a liability. He wants to save himself from the liability.
Correct. And in that sense, the whiskey, by saving himself from potential liability, has value to him. He would be willing to pay an insurance broker X amount of money to make sure that that whiskey bottle doesn't get stolen. He'd be willing to pay a security service, you know, a private detective or something, to protect that bottle of whiskey because it's worth a great deal. And again, you know, I'm giving you the case of whiskey. I can give you other cases that might be worth even more. And as long as the value of Kishas HaGzel goes up, the more vested interest the Gazan has in holding on to this thing. He doesn't want to lose it. And therefore, it has value from his perspective. If our analysis is correct, then it reminds me a lot of another sugya, which is called Dovra Gorem L'Mama. Do you remember that sugya? Which means, let's say, for example, a man takes upon himself a neder, which is called Hare Olai, as opposed to an Adova where he says Hare Zu. So if he says Hare Olai, and he takes upon himself a pledge to bring a carbon, then after he designates a specific Elsie the cow for that carbon, if Elsie the cow drops dead or gets stolen, he's going to have to buy another cow to replace the first cow. And the question is, would the Gazlan, if he stole the original cow that was designated as a Kirumai Neder, have to pay, or would the Mazik have to pay, under the halach of what? Dovar HaGorem L'Mama. So again, if you ask me, does he actually have monetary ownership over this cow once he's designated for a carbon? No. It belongs to Hegdesh. He can't claim ownership on it. But on the other hand, he has tremendous financial vested interest in the cow, because if the cow is lost, he's going to have to replace it with what? With another cow. What do you say, Jeff?
No, he's doubled his expense.
Correct. So that's called Dovar Gorem L'Mamon, and that's a gigantic machlokes in many sugyas and shas, mostly here in Bava Kamma, about whether there's a chiyuv nezikin for a Dovar Gorem L'Mamon. So the Gemara now comments, Milsa de Iboile L'Rava, Pshitole L'Rava. Mm-hmm. You know, Rava and Rava were contemporaries. Rava was a little bit older. He was called more of the rabbi, the teacher, the mentor. And Rava apparently had no doubt about it. That which was a suffolk, and Rava vacillated, but Rava never had a doubt about it. How do we know this? Now, keep in mind that Rava himself never actually addressed the exact scenario that Rava was vacillating about, but he addressed a case that's very, very similar, and he issued a verdict on that case, and from that verdict we can extrapolate conceptually how Rava defines the concept of Kfiras Mom. The Omar Rava. So what happens? Reuven comes to Shimon and he says to Shimon, J'accuse, you know. How do you say I accuse in French?
J'accuse.
J'accuse. I don't know how to pronounce it right. And Shori Ganavta, you stole my shor. For who, Omer? So Shimon responds, Lo Ganavta. I never stole it. Come on, Reuven says, you joking with me? What do you mean you know? So Ma Tivo Eslecha, I see my cow sitting in your corral. What's it doing over there? At that point, Shimon turns a little bit blue or red in the face, you know, and he backs down a little bit, and he says, Shomer Chinam Ani Olav. Actually, this is your cow, Reuven, it belongs to you, but you gave it to me and deposited me as a custodian to watch your cow. So basically, if at this moment in time, Shimon, right, the accused will take the shvuah, and he'll take the shvuah to the effect that I didn't steal the cow, but I was appointed by the Bailim as a shomer on the cow. And in this case, he says shomer chinom, which means that a shomer chinom, since he's not paid, is potter for everything. The only thing he's chayav for is negligence. That's called pshia. But in the absence of pshia, he's potter for both gneva and aveda. And how much more so onsim? Says Rabbah, after he took this false oath, he confesses his crime that really I did steal the cow. Chayav. The gazlan has to bring a korban osham gzelos. Now, Rabbah, without asking a question, answers the question. But the question is obvious. What difference does it make whether this cow belongs to Reuven the Tovea because of Gzela, or it belongs to Reuven the Tovea because of Shmira? He was a Shomer. Shimon was accepted the cow, at, received the cow as a Shomer Chino. At the end of the day, whether you take the Shvua as truth or you take the Shvua as fabrication, it makes no bit of difference at all, because ultimately, this way or that way, or either this way or that way, Shimon is going to return the cow to Reuven. He's not denying that he's going to return the cow to Reuven. Never once for a split second did he deny the cow from Reuven. The only question is, how did the cow get into Shimon's possession? Did he steal it, or did he get it from Reuven as a Shomer Chinam? Okay, so he took a false oath. Okay, punish him for a false oath. That's called Shvuas Bitui. But not for a Shvuas Gzela, for Hashem Gzelos. Under the law of Hashem Gzelos, he didn't steal anything. He took a false oath about the Maisa Gzela. But as far as the cow and its value is concerned, he admits that he has to return the cow to its rightful owner. And he never denied that, neither without a Shvuah, with a Shvuah. He took a Shvuah that he's a Shomer Chinam. Fine. He's not holding on to the cow, he's returning the cow. So what did he gain financially by taking this false oath? Not a penny. It's not a kfiras mama. So Rabbah now has to explain and justify his verdict that the gazan who took a shvua that I didn't steal it, but I received it as a shomer chinam, is chayav in Hashem gzelos. Sharei potar atzmo migneva vaveda. What does it mean? That there's a fundamental difference between admitting that you stole the cow and claiming that you received the cow as a Shomer Chinam. And the difference is going to be whether you pay for Gzela Vaveda, if the cow is stolen from the hands of Shimon, or it gets lost without Pshia, then does Shimon have to pay for that cow? The answer is it depends. If Shimon stole the cow, then a gazlan is chai for everything. There's no even a little possible hair's breadth of a case that you can come up with where the gazan doesn't have to pay. He always absolutely must pay. But as a Shomer Chinam, he will not pay for anything but Pshia, but he's part of Gneva Aveda. That makes it into a Kfiras Mamon. Rabbah goes a step further. What happens if he took a Shvua, this Shimon guy? Shomer Sachrani. Not only was I a Shomer, I was paid for my Shvir, in which case I'm Chayav for Gneva Vaveda. But nevertheless, it's called a Kfiras Mamon. He's Chayav Karban Shvua. Why? Sharei Potar Atzmo Mishvura Umesa, which means that he exempts himself from payment for Onsim. A Shomer Sachar doesn't pay for Ones. You know, if lightning strikes and kills the cow, then the Shomer Sachar, even though he was paid for a Shvir, he did everything he had to do. But what can he do to prevent the lightning, and therefore he's potter for the death of the cow? If, for example, the cow breaks a leg through no fault of the shomer doesn't have to pay. The breaking of the leg of the cow is also called an onus. Or let's say he received a utensil and the utensil fell and broke and smashed to pieces. He doesn't have to pay for that if it was onus. So the shomer, by the gazlan, Let me correct myself. That's a very bad mistake. The gazlan, by taking the false oath in which he claimed I didn't steal it, but rather I was a shomer sachar, gains a tremendous amount. Again, this is all theoretical. Lamaisa, he returns the cow. That's what happened at the end of the day. But at the moment of the shvua, ask the gazlan if you know in that part of his brain, if you could whisper to him, that part of his brain that admits that he stole the cow. Ask him, what do you gain by taking this false oath? What motivates you to take this oath? The answer is I gain a tremendous amount. Because as a gazan, I'm going to have to pay if the cow dies by lightning strike. And now, I'm a shomer zoch, I don't have to pay for onsen. Rabbah goes even a step further. Shoel ani alav. I was given the cow as a borrower, as a renter. I rented the cow. It's like, for example, I don't know if it's still true today, you go to an ice skating rink and you don't have your own skates, so you rent a pair of ice skates. Mm-hmm. And what happens if you're skating and all of a sudden something happens that you couldn't have predicted, and you trip and you fall and you break one of the skates? So in such a case, since you borrowed the skates and you have a din of a shoel, a shoel is chayev even for onsen. So what does this gazlan gain by claiming he's a shoel? So the answer is, says Rabba Shari, potar atzma mimesa machmas malocha. There is one case. Let's say, for example, I was skating, and it's not that I banged into something and I broke the skates, but the skates just got ruined. It's like, for example, a carpenter. You know, if he takes the hammer, which is supposed to have a sharp edge, you know, there was a steel end that's supposed to be very sharp, and he keeps hacking away with this hammer, or a shocher who keeps shechting, eventually it becomes dulled. Is there such a word? Dulled? Dulled? Dull? It becomes dull. So it's not worth that much. That a shoel doesn't have to pay for, because the whole purpose of his taking the object was for malacha. And he did the normal malacha that you do with that object. It was designated for a certain labor, and that's what he did. He doesn't have to pay for any damages that resulted from that labor. That's called mesa machmas malacha. On the other hand, if he's a gazlan has to pay for absolutely everything without any exception. So look what this gazlan gained, says Rabba, by taking this false oath. He now has procured for himself a ptur. He's now procured for himself a ptur, which he wouldn't have had if he had admitted that he stole the object. All these ptur. I was wondering why the Gemara has to give the example of Mesa Machmas Malacha. I thought of another example. There's something called Bailav Imo. In the case of Bailav Imo, the Torah says that a shoal is potter for anything that happens. But a gazlan is going to be chayiv in all cases. Allah says the Gemara. Now let's analyze the underlying conceptual principle of Rabba, of Rabba's verdict. Afal gav de ha-kayim, in other words, at this point the animal is alive and well. Nevertheless, kevar di mignav. Let's again, we talk about the case of a shomer chinam. Him, meaning that's the gazlan's claim, and that's the oath of the gazlan that he's a shomer chinam, is mamono kakofar. Because under the theoretical possibility that the cow will be stolen, the shvua is pottering up the so-called shomer chinam from paying for gneva. He's in truth he's a gazlan. He should pay for gneva mavi. Hashtanami mamona kakofar. So Rabba must be assuming that despite the fact that now at this moment he has the cow in his corral, and he's going to simply return the corral at no loss to himself, so whether or not he claims he's a shomer socher, shomer chinam, shoel, or a gazan, it's all the same. He's just going to return the exact same cow. The shvua sheker, that lo gazalti, saved him absolutely nothing. Nevertheless, since there's a theoretical possibility that he could have possibly saved something if the scenario had ended up in such a way that the object that he stole was lost, as a shomer, he would not have to pay for that loss. That theoretical gain makes the shvua into a shvuas kfiras moment. Is Hachanami here too, in the original case of someone who stole? He stole chametz before Pesach. After Pesach, he takes a shvuas sheker that he never stole this whiskey, as we said before. It's going to be a kfiras moment if he takes that shvua. Why? Because theoretically, if that whiskey is lost or stolen, he, the gazlan, is going to have to replace its value, pay its complete domim kishas hagzela. Afagav the afra the alma. Even though right now, at this present moment, the chametz is worthless, and therefore lechor it's not a kfiras mamon, but nevertheless, kevan de imignav boy shlumale, since on the theoretical possibility that it might be stolen and he can't return the whiskey, he's going to have to pay for its whiskey, is therefore mamona mi alma, it represents mamon, and hashtanam, even now that the chametz is sitting on his table, is mamona kakafale. We consider it as mamona because of the theoretical possibility that this whiskey might be worth something to him in event that what? That it gets stolen. So that's what we have here. The whole structure of the sugi is built around the following: that Rava had a safek, and Rava made a statement in a different context, in a different scenario, not the case of chametz. And from Rava, we can deduce that Rava had a definite answer and a definite position on the safek of Rava. Rava didn't know: is it called kfiras mamon based on the theoretical possibility of taking a loss? Meaning that the Shavua guaranteed a certain gain based on a theoretical loss? Or is it not called a kfiras mamon? Rava could not draw any definite conclusion, but Rava had no doubts about it. According to Rava, the theoretical loss that he could suffer in the absence of the Shavua makes the Shavua into a kfiras mamon, because that Shavua now protects him against that theoretical loss. Even though, and I emphasize this, I can't overemphasize this, even though in actual terms, in material terms, this theoretical possibility never came to fruition, and in fact the Shavua of the Gazan never saved the Gazan even a Shavua Pruta, but since at the time of the Shavua we couldn't have known for sure what's going to be in the future, so that the Shavua now protects him against this theoretical possible loss, that makes the Shavua into a kfiras mamon. We tried to suggest that why all this discussion and emphasis on the theoretical? Let's talk about the actual. And the answer is because there's something called subjective mamon. For me, it's worth something. I would pay for this chametz. Nobody else would pay for this chametz. Chametz is after Pesach's also about no. Why would I pay for it? I would hire a security guard to make sure it doesn't get stolen, because if it's lost, I have to go back to Shas Agzela and I have to pay the full dum in the value of the object. In the case of a shomer, alright, it's true that the shomer might be chayiv to pay for it, but it's also true that he might be potter from paying for it. And therefore, when the gazlan takes the shvua that I didn't steal it, although I admit it's yours, he is saving himself that theoretical possibility that he'll have to shell out for the loss of the cow. No, I'm sorry. Let me say it a little bit better than that. He is saving himself the possibility that he will not have to pay for the cow. Right? Because he's denying that he's a gazlan, which means absolutely and unconditionally he has to pay for the cow. He's theoretically saving himself that payment for the cow if the cow gets lost or destroyed by onus or by Gneva Vein in the case of Shomachinim, or through a Mesa Machmas Moloch in the case of Mishol. So because those instances may come about, in which case the Gazlan gains a great deal by saying that I was a Shomer and not a Gazlan, that makes this object into an object of value. It's called Mammon, and the Shvua therefore becomes a Shvuas Kfiras Mom. Yosef Rabo Vika Omar La Shmaita. Rava was sitting and he was saying over this halacha that the Gazlan who took a Shvua that he's a Shomer, a Shomel has to bring a Karban Asher. Esve Rav Amram La Rava. Rav Amram raised the following objection against Rava from a Braisa. This Braisa is analyzing the same parsha that we've been analyzing now for quite a few meetings, namely Vayikra Perek Hey, in the context of Shvuas Karban Asham, Asham Zelos. And there, the Braisa says, in the pasuk it says, V'kichesh ba v'nishba al sheker. That the Gazlan who denied the obligation to pay as a Gazlan, he took a false oath, the kichesh ba, he denied ba. What's ba? And the Gemara assumes that the extra word ba is coming as a mute, that only in the case of ba does the Gazan have to bring a Karban Hasham Gzeilus, but if it's not ba, then he's potter from Hasham Gzeilus. Prat, what is this coming to exclude? When is it not ba? Lemode be'ikar, when the Shvua that the Gazlan took is a confession that the main part of what's being demanded of him, what he's being sued for, is going to be returned to the Gazel, to the Nigzal, in any event. So there's what's called a Hodah Be'ikar Hataina, which means the Taina is, you're holding on to my property. He says, and he takes a shruah to this effect, that I'm not holding on to your property. In other words, this property is yours and I'm not holding on to it. I'm not confiscating it from you. Once he admits that the object that's he's being accused of stealing is in effect the is the object of the Tovea, right, of the Nigzal, and it belongs to you, and I admit it belongs to you, that Shvua would not engender a Chiyuv of Asham Gzelos, which is exactly opposite of what Rabba just said. Ketzad, what's the case? Now, the case is a little bit more complicated than we thought. Ketzad, Shor Ganavta, you stole my Shor, Vu Omer Lo Ganavta. I never stole it. Mativo Etzcho, so why is it there sitting in your corral? Ata Machartoli. Now, it's interesting, in the case of Ata Machartoli, if the Gazlan takes a shvur to the effect that the Nigzal sold him the cow, so then he's not willing to pay for the cow. He bought it Kedasu Kedin. So why is that called Prat L'moda V'ikar? He's not being moda in anything. I don't owe you a dime, my friend, because you sold me this cow. I paid for it with good money over La Socha. So that's a problem. We're going to have to, the Gemara's going to have to deal with this in just a few minutes. Atanasato libimatoni, he gave it to me as a gift. Once again, the same problem. Avicha mecharo li, your father sold it to me. Avicha nasato li, nasno libimatoni, your father gave it to me as a gift. Or, achar parasi rots me'elav uba etzli. In other words, your cow was running after, your shor was running after my cow. I guess a shor runs after a cow. A cow is a female, a shor is a male. So anyway, basically, here's your ox. Your ox roamed into my possession. It got somehow locked up in the corral, but I never intended to steal it.
It's a shor mechina, it's in that case.
Maybe, it could be, but I don't know, David, that's so relevant to us now. But what's relevant to us now is that the Gazlan is now taking a shvua to the effect that, here, take your cow and go fly a kite with it. I didn't steal it from you, but here's your cow and take it. That's not a kfiras mamon, and therefore it's excluded under the word ba, because ba means that primarily he was kofir b'mamon. He's not kofir b'mamon. He's admitting that he doesn't own the cow. He's going to return the cow like a good Samaritan, like a good citizen. Or toev aderech mitzasiv. Oh, I found a cow that was roaming, you know, aimlessly through the streets, and I brought it into my house. Shomer chinam ani olav. Here's another case. So in this last case, when he says that, you know, I didn't know this was your cow. A cow roamed into my backyard. So if it's your cow, I don't know, let me give you back the cow. But I never stole it. So in that case, you can see why it's excluded from a shvuas asham gzelos, because it's not ba, it's not the ikar hataina. Or shomer chim ani olav, shomer socha ani olav, shoel ani olav. In all these cases, he's going to return the cow. And you might think, v'nishba v'hoda, since he took a shvua, you might think that he should be chayav because he's denying that he stole the cow. Yochal, I might think, hey, chayav, he should bring a korban asham gzelos. Talmud lomar, that's why the pasuk adds the word ba, v'kichesh ba, prat l'mode v'ikar. There's no complete kfira here. He's saying, you know, here's your cow, I'm going to return it to you. That's not a shvua on a kfiras mamon, and therefore it's excluded under the word ba. But clearly, what do you see from this brisa? The exact opposite of what Rava has been saying until now. Rava has been saying until now that there's a theoretical, you know, saving on the part of the Gazlan here. He saves himself in the case where the animal dies, that he doesn't have to pay for the animal. Had he admitted that he stole the animal, he'd have to pay for the animal even though it drops dead of old age. It doesn't matter, one iota. Michael, are you with me on this?
Well, yeah. It seems to me that there are two different sets of circumstances in this crisis. So the first ones are where he's basically saying, it's mine.
It's mine.
And the other one, he's saying, it's yours, take it.
Right, so that's what I tried to point out before. The Gemara's going to pick this up later. That's a pure fierce moment. What do you mean he's not being modemikartain? Of course. He's denying the whole taina from A to Z. He's saying, I don't have to pay you a dime for this cow. You sold it to me, you gave it to me. So the Gemara is going to come up with all sorts of attempts to make any sense out of this price. Like, for example, he says, you sold it to me, but I never paid you for it. So he's going to have to pay him now by his own confession. So what did he gain by the shvuah? Because had he stolen it, he'd have to pay for the cow, or at least return the cow and its value. Or now, claiming that he bought it from him, he'd have to return the money that he didn't pay. These are all very difficult to kimtis, but otherwise the price doesn't make any bit of sense. Pardon the pun. Amar Lei. So at this point, when Rabbah hears this kasha, this objection from Rav Amram, he gets very sensitive about it. He says, Tidura. Yeah, Rashi here doesn't say much about it, but elsewhere, Rashi says, Tidura is a shaita bahu. You know, it bad enough if you're a shaita, but if you're a shaita bahu, you know, you're an ignoramus, and not only that, you're bahu, you're in a state of tension. So in general, people, even them, when they're intelligent, if they're bahu, they say the wrong things and they say stupidities. Imagine when a crazy person is in a state of tension. It's doubly bad. But this is typical, you know, in Shas, they hurl very harsh words one at the other. I always give the example of the Ramban. The Ramban was very upset that the Baal HaMor, Rabbi Yisrach HaLevi, wrote his magnum opus, which is called the Ma'or HaGadol, which is a critique on the Rif. And the Ramban wrote the Melchemes Hashem to fight the Lord's battles in order to defend the Rif against the Baal HaMor. So at one point, he gets so upset with the Baal HaMor, he writes, HaMa'or HaGadol Hichshich Es HaOlam. That's what he says about Rabbi Yisrach HaLevi. This great luminary dark in the world. Yeah, that's pretty harsh. I remember one Gemara where he says to him, Eilecha moach bekodkodcha. You don't even have a brain in your skull. You know, I mean, these are things, if you said it today, they would maybe accuse you of slander or something. I don't know what, but in those days, you know, I saw a little bit with Rav Soloveitchik. Man, if he got angry at you, forget it. Woo! But I thank God in my generation he was already toned down, you know, but fire and brimstone. Anyway, so Rabbah says, how do you have the chutzpah of asking such an idiosyncratic question? Tidura. Ki tanyo, that braisa, hahi, deka amar lei halef. Now for this, we might want to learn the first sugya, the first major sugya in Bava Metzia on Daf Gimel called halef. Does everybody remember that sugya, halef? So it works like this. Normally, a modem mixer satayin is chayv shvua. So if I deny 100 by confessed 100, then on the 100 that I deny, I have to take a shvua's modem mixer. The exception, says Rav Chia, is halach. If he takes out 100 and he just throws it at him, you know, he says, "Here's your 100, and don't bother me," because then what he does is he sort of closes the case and the tayin and tviya on that 100. And on the other 100, he was a kofar kol. He denied the entire balance of the thing. So he's never a modem mixus. That's called halach. So for that, you have to spend a good deal of time to figure out halach. So what's halach in our case? The ganav, the gazan in this case, says, look, I'm a shomer, and this is your cow. Halach, here's your cow. Come and take it. At that particular moment, the cow is considered as if it was already returned. And if that be the case, that halach is a hashava, then there's no theoretical possibility here that the gazan who took this false shvua is going to gain anything. What are you going to tell me? But maybe it'll be stolen and he doesn't have to pay for the cow. The answer is he already said halach. Once he says halach, the entire enterprise of shmira with all its chiyuvim and achrayus is completely closed. It's a done deal. Kikamina, but I, Rabbah, in my verdict, Dekaima ba'agam. I was talking about a case where the animal is sitting there in the agam. You know, it's grazing out there in the what's called the mirror. You know, the grazing land. And therefore, if I'm a shomer, it's very possible that I won't even have to pay you back for this cow if somebody comes along and steals the cow. So therefore, says Rabba, by claiming I didn't steal it and taking a shvuah to that effect, he saved himself the payment of the cow in event that the cow is stolen or lost. That's where Rabba came up with his principle that theoretical loss of money constitutes a shvuah of kfiras mamon. But in the case of Halich, where the Gzela is there sitting there on his desk and he says, take it, then there's no possibility that it'll be potter for onsim because he already is considered as if he returned the object. Now the Gemara picks up your question, Michael. Atomachartoli, my moda be'ikar ika, if the Gazlan claims you sold it to me and therefore I have to return it to you, I'm sorry, if the Gazan claims you sold it to me and if I don't have to return it to you, so why are you telling me that that's not a shvuas kfiras mamon? By virtue of the shvuah, he saves himself 100 because the cow is worth 100. Now he's claiming it's my cow and he takes a shvuah to that effect. Lo tzricha di amale, what's the case? Lo nasati lecha dmei, or dummy. In other words, I bought it and the kinyan was clinched, but I didn't pay for it yet. Shakil tarcha vizil. Take your cow and run with it. Meaning, I'm not going to pay you the amount of money that I owe you for this cow. Why? Because even though a person who buys a cow has to pay the money, that's a chov. But in this particular case, he's saying, I'd rather return the cow to you and cancel the deal, and therefore alleviate myself from payment of the cow. So now, in any event, he's returning the cow. So what did he gain by the shvur? The shvur says, I didn't steal it. Had he stolen it, he would return the cow, and even after he takes the shvur, he has to return the cow, because otherwise he's going to have to pay for the cow. You sold me the cow, and I never paid for it. Here, take your cow, and shalom al yisra. So on this particular Gemara, there's a gigantic sugya in the Rishonim. Does a person have a right to to back down from a sale and say to the seller, you know what, I don't want your object. Here, take it back, and I don't want to pay you for it. Once the kinyan was clinched, that's irreversible. He's got to pay that chol. And therefore, Ketzad, I'm reading here from the Ramah, the Ramah was one of the Sephardic Rishonim who's quoted extensively by the Shittim Gubetzis. He writes, Ketzad yochal lokeach, how can lokeach say, take your shor, ulevatel es hamekach, and null and void the sale, ulehachzel lo es hashor atzmo, bimkom l'shalim es hadomav, instead of paying its domim. After all, Hamocher Chefetz Chaver Chayev Alokech L'Shalim Lo Es Domov. That's the question here. How can he possibly say that, you know what, take your shor and I don't want to pay you? But in any event, whatever the Ramah, the very complicated answer to the Ramah, but just to understand our sugi, what we need to know is that there's no Chiyuv Karban of Hashem Gzelos in this case because the the Gazlan is admitting that he's got to return the shor. Says the Gemara, Atan Asatoli, Avichan Asnoli, my mode of Ikarika. If he's claiming that he owns the cow by virtue of a gift, where the gift was given to him personally, directly, or to his father, and he inherited it, it doesn't matter one iota. But in any event, he is claiming that he doesn't have to return the cow. How can you tell me that he's exempt from a karban Asham Gzelos? The Omer Alei, says the Gemara, what's the case of the Brisa, where the Gazlan says to the Nigzal regarding the Shor al Manas, David Noloch Naicha Denafsha, the gift was a conditional gift, and the condition was that the recipient of the gift would do something on behalf of the donor, of the giver. Like, for example, the Gemara has a case in Kedusha, where he says, Al Menashe Tadabri Olai El Amelech. Let's say a guy was in trouble with the government, and someone else had the clout, and he says, I'm going to give this to you, or enter into this deal, on the condition that you speak on my behalf to the powers that be. And at the end, he never lived up to this condition. V'lo avdi lei, he didn't fulfill that tova, that condition. And nefesh kol tarcha v'zil. Here, take your shor. I'm giving it back to you because the gift is invalid. I never fulfilled the condition of the gift. Toa baderech mitzasiv, your cow roamed into my corral and I found it there, is lema iboile la durele. What the nigzal should say is, like, you know, if you by your own admission confess that this cow is not yours and it roamed into your corral, then return the cow to me. And if the nigzal has that right to reclaim the cow, then again the shvuo, in which he denied that he was a gazlan, doesn't affect to any gain, any monetary gain on behalf of the gazlan. Omar avua de shvuel be omer shvuo. I'm taking a shvuo aveda matzasi velo ayisi odeh shehi shalcha shachzirenu lecha. The gazlan takes a shvuah that I found this animal, I didn't recognize it, I didn't know it was yours, and therefore I didn't return it to you. And therefore, I'm denying that I stole it. And since I deny that I stole it, I'm therefore taking a shvuah sheker. I'm not gaining anything because I'm admitting and confessing that it's your shor. I'm going to return to you the shor. There's no, what we call, ikar kfiras mamon, and therefore the word ba is going to exclude this kfiras mamon. Okay, we have 2 minutes before Mincha, so I'll just give a very, very short and terse introduction to the next sugya. As Ben Azai is quoted in a brisa as telling us that if a person knows Eidus and he refuses to give testimony, so imagine that I know testimony that could help you financially in your claim against so-and-so. And I have this Eidus, but I refuse to come. Very often, as you and I know, people who have testimony, they decline and they refuse coming into the courts for any number of reasons. Perhaps the greatest of is they don't want to get in trouble with the nidon against whom they're going to testify. So the law is, and this again is in Parshas Vayikra, that if the aid who has Eidus to give denies his knowledge, he denies his testimony to the Tovea who needs him desperately for this Eidus, and then he takes an oath and he says, I don't know any testimony for you. If ultimately we find out that he did know testimony, or let's say he confesses that he perjured himself with this oath, he's got to bring what's called a Shvuas Karbon Eidus. But what happens in the case where one aid is there? If you have two aid, then the brunt or the thrust of their aidus would have been enough to force the defendant to pay up. But what if there's only one aid? Then at the end of the day, even had he given his aidus, the defendant would not have to cough up that money. Would that aid, if he took a shvuah to the effect that I don't know aidus for you, would he be chay of a carbon shvuah, or should we say he's part of a carbon shvuah? Because again, like the case of Hashem Zelos, the carbon of a shvuah sa'edus is only because the aidus had the power to win money in the case of the tovea. But if the aid is alone, he's a single witness, he can't win the case on behalf of the tovea. Would that constitute a shvuas karban eidus on that? So we neder, we'll pick that up on Yom Kippur. In the case of Eidim Zomimim, the halacha would be that the aid gets malchus. Why? Because whenever you can't force the aid who became an aid zomim to pay mama, like in the case of Eidim, once the aid, then we give him malchus instead.